We're talking this hour about what it would take to decolonize psychedelics. And the people to ask are the descendants of those who used them first.
Poso, Segoli, Sutton King, Naktau, Pinuki, Nukiats, Unguahue, Ni'i, Waknata, Nawagitalota, Oniotaaga, Ni'i. So that's my language, the Oneida language, and I said hello. My English name is Sutton King, and my Menominee name is Naktau Pinuki. That means comes first woman. And I said that I'm Turtle Clan of the Oneida Nation, which are the people of the Standing Stone, but I'm also people of the Wild Rice, which are the Menominee people.
Sutton King is a young Indigenous rights activist. She's the co-founder and president of the Urban Indigenous Collective, a public health group serving Native Americans in the tri-state area of New York. Her goal is to change the culture around psychedelic medicines by confronting historical wrongs and by getting Indigenous people into science labs and onto the boards of pharmaceutical companies. So, when did you become interested in plant medicines as a way to heal trauma and addiction and other problems?
That story begins very early in my life. My mother has always shown me and taught me the importance of my culture as a way as medicine and as a way of healing. She made sure that I had my early education in daycare on the Oneida Reservation, where I learned my language and our different ways of life. For my mom, who was born in the 70s, it's really important for her to reclaim her indigeneity and what it means. Whereas my grandmother, she was really brought up in a Catholic religious household, and that was due to her great-grandfather going to Carlisle Indian boarding school, where they were very much so assimilated, right? The mantra there was, kill the Indian, save the man. So ceremony and our ways of life have always been important.
And were plant medicines part of that whole tradition for you and your family?
Not psychedelics, but we have many different plant medicines that are central to our healing, whether that be tobacco, sweetgrass, cedar, and sage. But it wasn't until college that I was really introduced to psychedelics, what the Western society has named them, right? And for me, I'm a survivor of gender-based violence. I'm a survivor of sex trafficking. I'm a survivor of childhood abuse, as sexual abuse as well. And to really be able to heal that, psychedelics played a pivotal role.
When you say a survivor, you're talking personally or you're talking about kind of the culture that you grew up in?
Personally. Really, the motivation to leave my community in Wisconsin and move to New York City to pursue a degree in psychology was to understand how historical trauma and intergenerational trauma has impacted my family and my lineage, and understanding that that trauma didn't begin with me, but it can end with me.
So coming back to psychedelics then, why was that so important to you personally?
Yeah. Plant medicines, which Indigenous peoples refer to instead of psychedelics as the Western world does, this has always been a way of our life that was taken from us because of boarding school and assimilations. Psychedelics didn't begin with Huxley and Hoffman in the 60s and the 70s. Indigenous peoples have been protecting them from time immemorial.
So you're saying, I mean, part of this is we need a different history, not the usual history of, you know, it starts with Albert Hoffman and Gordon Wasson and Aldous Huxley. There's an entirely different history of psychedelics or plant medicines.
Absolutely. We can't tell the true history of psychedelics without acknowledging the plight of Indigenous peoples, right? It was through the American Indian Religious Freedom Act that we even got our right to practice in ceremony and sit with peyote. And so I think for me, reading this research, understanding the traditional and cultural ways of life, it made sense for me to sit with my friends on the great lawn at my university and try psychedelics for the first time. And in that experience, I could feel this historical trauma running through my veins. I could feel my ancestors' pain. I understood it. It was like a veil was lifted from in front of my face. And I released so much shame that I felt for that, just being Indigenous. And being an Afro-Indigenous, being both Black and Native American, there's a lot of historical and intergenerational trauma that my lineages have faced.
There's obviously a long history of Western scientists, researchers, anthropologists going into Indigenous cultures and finding these plant medicines, being told about them and then extracting them and then taking them back to the United States and other places. in ways that have been really awful in Absolutely. Some cases. So what do you do with that? I mean, how you can create the sense of trust, this healing, bridging cultures, mm-hmm. both from the indigenous perspective and also from sort of the modern Western medical perspective.
Yeah. Let's all sit down and have a conversation.
What do you want to talk about in that conversation?
Yeah, absolutely. I think that we come together, we bring Western experts and indigenous experts, right? And we sit down together and we talk about the harm that has happened. And then we can talk about what a future looks like together. And I think that we can't talk about a solution without repairing the harm that has happened historically. And so I think it's really a co-creation of the minds that has to happen. And I don't know what that looks like, right? You can't come in with your own assumptions and your own biases. But with decolonizing, my hope is that Indigenous peoples will continue to be invited into these conversations, that we are a part of these boards, that we are researchers, clinicians, that we are having a seat at the table as well.
Are there certain Indigenous practices that non-Indigenous people should just not be part of? Sort of like, that's what we do, that's not what you do. How would you talk about that?
Yeah, and I think, again, there's a lot of different perspectives. But my own perspective is that non-Indigenous peoples should leave peyote ceremony to Indigenous peoples. And I think that has been shown and highlighted by the Native American Church with a lot of their advocacy and what they have shared that they want. And I think that there are so many different other medicines that non-Indigenous peoples can use to sit with San Pedro or perhaps synthetic mescaline or so many other, again, psychedelics that exist that aren't facing ecological threat. But I think we have to recognize when people get upset and say, well, peyote is a plant. Everyone should have access to this plant. Well, Indigenous peoples have died for the right to access their ceremonies. And we have to really respect the plight historically Indigenous peoples have gone through. Again, referencing the American Indian Religious Freedom Act, our aunties and our grandmas and grandpas were incarcerated for this, right? And so if their wish right now is that non-Indigenous peoples refrain from using peyote, I think the way in which we can decolonize is by centering Indigenous values and thoughts and perspectives. And if that is one, then we should center it and move on.
Sutton King is a Native rights activist and president of the Urban Indigenous Collective. And you know, it's not just the younger generation that's speaking up about wanting to rebuild that historic connection to plant medicines. This moment has been coming for a long time. Sutton mentioned the aunties and elders. This is one of hers.
When I was young, my great-grandfather would come to my grandfather's home right when the sun was rising, and my grandfather would cook him breakfast, and they would speak the language to each other. What I learned later on as I got older was that my grandfathers were part of the boarding school era. They were in boarding schools. And they were part of Native American church, so they used peyote in sacred ways and in their ceremonies. I was never introduced to that part of myself, part of who I am. I'm Rachel Fernandez, Menominee Indian Tribal member, Menominee Tribal legislator. You know, being assimilated and being taught a different religion. Growing up, I was to be Catholic. And I was not supposed to take part in Native American church. I was not supposed to use the language. I was not supposed to use the medicines. My grandparents were afraid that I would be taken away, just like the other kids were, like they were. So that was the disconnect. So now learning about myself, learning how to heal myself with other medicines that we use, I'm feeling that connection and the need to fill that part of me that has been missing all of these years. So learning about Native American Church, learning about peyote, it's really a part of me that I need. You know, I'm a grandmother, and I want my children, my grandchildren, to know this is a part of you too. Even my mother, she wouldn't talk about it much. I would ask her questions. She wouldn't talk about it. Growing up in our Native communities, you don't talk about things like that. You don't talk about what happened to us. And then I found my great-grandfather in a book for Native American Church. And he was like the head person. So then I went back to my mom and I'm like, so tell me about this. The bundle gets passed down. So my grandfather was supposed to have it. He didn't take it. It was supposed to go to my mom. You know, we have that medicine. We have that. And it really saddened me that I missed out on it. My mom missed out on it. My grandfather knew about it. I wonder how he felt that he couldn't share that with us. You know, I was not the perfect mom because of all that trauma that I carried with me. Not only my own, but my ancestors that I carried with me. So I'm trying to teach my kids, my grandkids, that you don't have to be stuck in there. You don't have to have this colonial mindset. You are Indigenous, you're Menominee. We're Potawatomi also. You are more than, and we need to learn who that is.
Rachel Fernandez is a Menominee Indian tribal legislator in Wisconsin.